Hello, and welcome to Justice Society Presents. This is our anthology podcast reaching a variety of shows and hosts celebrating some of our favorite comics and characters associated with the Golden Age of Comics, Earth 2, the JSA, and beyond. Now, today's discussion is all about the recently published six-issue miniseries, Stargirl, The Lost Children. And in some ways, it's kind of a follow-up to an episode we did 2 years ago about the Stargirl Spring Break Special. Now, I'm one of your hosts today. My name is the Irredeemable Shag, and along with me is my good pal, who's as reliable as my trusty cosmic rod, Mr. Sean Ross. Wait, that probably didn't sound right. Oh, well. How you doing, Sean?
I'm good. I don't know that I want to be your trusty cosmic. Can I be your gravity rod? No, that's not any better.
It's not getting better.
Your star rocket racer? No, that's not. Your whiz wagon? What? No. Man, the 40s were just packed with double entendres.
We're just digging a hole this deeper. So anyway, it's been 2 years since we got together to talk about the Spring Break Special, which was supposed to immediately lead into this book, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. I did not realize it had been 2 years until we were, coordinating for this episode. And I went back and listened to the Spring Break Special episode just to remind myself. And I was like, oh my God, that really was like, that was so long ago. I can't believe it took that long. And then I remembered, oh yeah, Geoff Johns' time. Yes, that makes sense. So,
well, I feel like the person that lost out the most on this was the character Stargirl herself, because when the last issue, or when Spring Break Special came out, like season one of Stargirl had just finished, right? And So it was like perfect to ramp up for season two, get you excited. Now the whole series is over. Like, When this comes out, unfortunately, the Stargirl bandwagon is, at least as far as television goes, is gone now. So it sort of makes me sad. Now, when we talked last time, you had not watched the TV series yet. Did you ever get a chance to watch it?
Oh, I did. Yeah. So you had recommended it. Paul Hicks had recommended it, a bunch of people. And so I started watching it and I loved it. Like, I really, CW shows, there's always that little bit of like schmaltzy, CW-ness to it, which I'm okay with. But in this case, there was like a real heart to that show. Mm-hmm. And it, and Luke Wilson is so endearing, and Breck Bassinger as Stargirl was so endearing that I really just fell in love with the show and all the quirky, like icicles in it. And, the Huntress and Sportsmaster are hilarious. And, they just, again, little droplets of for comic fans, but just a show with a lot of heart. So yeah, I watched it and was totally devastated when it got canceled. I was like, this is a legitimately really good show with good actors and, a sweet storyline, can appeal to multiple people, multiple ages. But, CW is just starting and canceling shows like they're going out of style. But no, I did watch it and I loved it and I am sad it's gone. How about you?
I watched the first season, absolutely loved it. I watched most of the second season and then I just got distracted. It's not like I didn't like it. I just got busy with life. So my intention is to get back to it. And then once I heard, that it was canceled after season three, it was very disappointing. Even though I'm behind, I was still enjoying every bit of it. It's such a fun show. So much heart is the best word I can use. And I feel like it celebrates the fun of the character too.
Yeah. And it really kept things about the family. Like it knew what it was. It knew exactly what it was. It knew where where its strengths lay in its actors and its characters. And so the superhero stuff was fun and it was well done for a TV show, but it was never the point. And I liked that. I liked that it was more of a character driven show first.
And I am a little worried about where they'll go next. Because this show hit all the beats right about family. So Where do they go next with it? Because I'm sure this is not the end of the character Stargirl. I'm sure she'll appear in live action again somehow.
Oh, yeah.
A JSA movie, whatever. So I just hope they get it right.
Yeah, I do too. And it's going to be a little tricky because there was a novel, Stargirl, YA novel, like 7-8 years ago that was super, super popular. It was a great book, but was turned into one of the worst movies ever made. And so I think there's a little brand confusion there right now, but that's probably leaving the consciousness soon. And I do hope she appears again. And actually, I hope it's Breck Bassinger because she was fantastic.
Yeah, that would be awesome to lean back into that. So time will tell and hopefully they'll do it right because they did it right the first time. So,
yep.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. We have six issues of a comic to talk about, so we should jump into this, folks. We do need to take a second to thank our sponsors right out of the gate, though. This episode of Justice Society Presents is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, I picked another series that was done by Todd Knock, who is one of my favorite comic book artists. This one is not DC, but it's got a ton of fun, colorful characters. It's called Invincible Universe Trade Paperback Volume 1. It was written by Phil Hester with art by Todd Nuck. And it takes place in that Invincible universe, and it features a whole bunch of different characters. You know, Invincible, the Guardians of the Globe, Tech Jacket, the Astounding Wolfman, and a whole bunch more. Again, it's called Invincible Universe, collects issues 1 through 6, and it's a lot of fun. And if you've ever enjoyed the Invincible series, this would absolutely be right in your wheelhouse. And again, it's Todd Nuck and Phil Hester's writing, so it's a win all the way around. It's 144 pages. It is full color. Normally goes for $16.99, but you can get it for 42% off, so it's only $9.85. That's nothing. I mean, that's less than a Happy Meal at McDonald's probably nowadays. So pick this up if you love Todd Nuck. Now, Sean, did you happen to bring a book to recommend?
I did. So you went Nuck, which is awesome. So I went Johns, and I went with one of my favorite later Johns series, which was Booster Gold Volume 2. And so the book I'm recommending is Booster Gold 52 Pickup, the trade paperback 2023 edition. It's written by Jeff Johns and Jeff Katz. It's drawn by Dan Juergens and Norm Rapman. I mean, like all-time pairing. And it covers Booster Gold 1 through 6. The superhero from tomorrow must repair the timeline of the DC Universe to earn membership in the Justice League of America. If you're a Booster Gold fan and you really love that character and you want to see him sort of repurposed and refocused, this is a great book to pick up. It's again written by Katz and Johns, drawn by Juergens and Rapman, should get you there on its own. 160 pages. It's normally $19.99. It is on sale for $11.59, 42% off. And I really can't recommend this series enough. I love Booster Gold. I loved Booster Gold Volume 1, which was written and drawn by Dan Juergens. So it was such a treat to have him drawing the book. And then when Johns leaves, he actually takes over writing it for a while too. So great book. Did you ever read that?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. It was such a perfect way to rebrand Booster. Because, Booster was a hero, and then he was a joke in the JLI. Mm-hmm. And then they left him sort of in this weird place. So this took a chance to say, you know what? Booster, the world's still going to think Booster's a joke. But in secret, he's actually the hero, the greatest hero you've never heard of kind of thing.
Yep.
And that was an awesome idea. It was the right way to play with time travel in the DC universe. It felt like a celebration of DC's legacy, which is exactly where Johns should live. And it was a lot of fun.
And there was a nice connection to Rip Hunter and the Time Masters, which I thought connected nicely to this mini. Yeah.
Well done. Look at you using the noodle. Okay. Well done.
not just a hat holder, my friend.
Well, folks, for these and all your favorite trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com. Now, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, running the Firewater Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying the Justice Society Presents podcast, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW Podcast. And while you're there, please consider supporting the network. And at a certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these folks. Our thanks go out to Alex Osias, David Ace Gutierrez, Gord Tolton, Jason Keane, Keechee Baker, Michael Bailey, and Ted Kilvington. Again, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcast. Also, I want to say, if you're a fan of the JSA and you enjoy shows like this, there is going to be a lot more coming on this feed coming soon.
Woohoo!
Next summer, I am going to finish up my Justice League International Bwahaha podcast. That's actually going to end after 7 years. And one of the ways I'm going to spend some of my time is doing more episodes over here on JSA. My intention is to start covering the 1990s Mike Parabek JSA series.
Good.
It is great. I'm going to cover that issue by issue. I'm going to cover the miniseries that came before that. And then I'm really going to spend some time focusing on all kinds of JSA appearances in the 1990s. So there will be a lot more coming on this feed in the near future. So buckle up, make sure you're subscribed, and get ready for more content. It's going to, like I said, it'll take a little while to ramp up because I still got to finish the other job through next summer. But it's coming your way, folks. All right, so let's get into this. Stargirl, The Lost Children, issues 1 through 6. Now, folks, we are going to be throwing spoilers. So if you haven't read it yet and you don't want to be spoiled, don't listen yet. Come back. It's not very complicated. So and also, I would suggest before you read this, you should read The New Golden Age, which was a one-shot DC published. And in the back there, they published a whole bunch of Who's Who pages that are directly related to this. Now, we didn't talk about that. Did you read The New Golden Age?
I did. And actually, it's funny that you recommend it. Because I don't think, even though I enjoyed the issue, I don't think the issue itself is the important part. But those Who's Who pages are really vital to this mini, and they're wonderful.
Yes, I would concur 100-fold in that. Yes, absolutely right. right? The story itself is really a lead into the JSA series, but those why is that hard to say? Those who's who pages.
I screwed it up, and now you're going to screw it up. Yeah, I said it right. Who instead of who's who. Who sounds like a Yoo-Hoo knockoff. Like it's like, you know, Carob Yoo-Hoo.
I've been talking about the Who's Who comics for 11 years, you know, on that podcast. You think I wouldn't have a problem with this? Anyway, definitely check out the New Golden Age, then come back for Stargirl, The Lost Children, issues 1-6, which are written all by Jeff Johns, art by Todd Knock. So he's doing the penciling and inking on this, folks. Letter is Rob Lee. Colorist is Matt Helms. Editor is Andrew Marino. Now, it went on sale beginning in November 15th, 2022, and finished in May 9th, 2023. And we're going to do a recap in a second here, but I do want to mention the covers. The covers are by Todd Knock. They're absolutely stunning. And they had a buttload of variant covers. Holy moly. I put these out here for Sean and I to see. And it's kind of obvious a lot of the people who worked on these variant covers didn't know what the series was going to be about. So a lot of them feature Stars and Stripe. And Stripe's, mm-hmm. I don't think he even makes an appearance in this. I think, you know, he does his Pat, but I don't think he appears as Stripe in the whole thing.
Nope.
I just have to mention one of the variant covers, which just cracked me up. It shows that here we are 30 years later, and we learned the wrong lessons from history, which is they did a foil variant cover for number one, which just, and it's going on eBay for a ridiculous amount of money. Folks, you learn nothing. You learn nothing from the 1990s. Oh my gosh.
I'm telling you, it's crazy. Nostalgia is a hell of a drug, because I was like, wait, a foil variant for Stargirl? I was like,
right?
Wait, yeah, I was like, what? And foil variants for anything are crazy, but yeah, it's, and even just the sheer number of variant covers is astounding. And what's really funny is, if I'm in a comic shop and I see a cool variant, you know, and I'm going to pick up the issue anyway, I'll get the variant cover instead of the normal cover quite often. But I wasn't going anywhere but Todd Knock on this. So
yeah.
I'm Todd Knock all the way through.
The only exception I would have made is for issue 4. The Todd Knock cover has Courtney reading an old Flash comic from like the 1940s. It's a fake Flash comic.
Yeah.
But then they took that Flash comic and did a variant of the whole cover of that. I'm probably not making a lot of sense. I'm talking in circles here. But they did a variant which featured a fake 1940s Flash cover, which that was pretty darn cool.
It is. That one's really cool.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the story, folks. Here we go. So, Stargirl and Red Arrow are following up on the mysterious Vision from the Stargirl Spring Break special. So, yeah, even though we had to wait 2 years, it is a direct follow-up to that. They're trying to locate the teenage superhero called Wing, who is the sidekick to the Golden Age Crimson Avenger. Now, Wing died years ago, saving the world from the Nebula Man. But Stargirl and Red Arrow, they have reason to believe that he's still alive and in danger. So they follow a lot of various leads, and our heroines are led to seek out Dan the Dynamite, who's a senior citizen now, but back in the day, he was the teenage sidekick of TNT. Turns out that Dan was investigating other Golden Age teen sidekicks who disappeared without a trace, and now Dan himself has gone missing. So they follow Dan's trail all the way across the Pacific Ocean, and Stargirl and Red Arrow, they track him down to this mysterious island that Courtney saw in her vision, an island that we come to know as Orphan Island. There they find Wing and a whole host of teen sidekicks from the past, and they are all still teenagers, just as they were back in the 1940s. But among these familiar faces are many that Stargirl's never even heard of before. So where did these kids come from? What happened to them? And why were they erased from time? These are all questions that we're left asking. So also among the crowd is a teenage time master named Corky, who claims to know the future of many of the children. So we're introduced to this horrible, horrible villain, this creature, this half-human, half-bird called the Childminder. The Childminder's been keeping all the teen sidekicks hostage on Orphan Island, awaiting a mysterious buyer who wants to buy the children for themselves. To save the lost children, Stargirl leads a raid on the Childminder's castle. And during the chaos, this mysterious buyer arrives. And shockingly, it is the superhero android Hourman, member of the JSA and teammate of Stargirl. He's there to buy the children? What? So the action and the heroes and the art, it's all wall-to-wall as the children battle against the Childminder's minions, and it's revealed that Hourman is a minion himself, having been reprogrammed and working for the Big Bad. Turns out that the true mastermind is a future version of Corky the Time Master. I know, I'm scratching my head a bit too. So this adult Corky, this mastermind guy, he wanted to keep the lost children on Orphan Island to protect the timeline, and return Wing to that pivotal moment in history where he died saving the world from the Nebula Man. So Wing ends up making the ultimate sacrifice to ensure the timeline stays on course, even though the other teen heroes try to save him. In the end, Stargirl and Red Arrow escape Orphan Island, pulling all these time-lost teenagers with them through time to present-day Blue Valley. So Courtney, from there, begins to plan a new superhero team composed of these lost children called Young Justice Society. Whew, so there we go. 6 issues, a lot going on. What'd you think, buddy?
Great synopsis. It's such a fun series. It's just so, it's delightful. It's the word I would use. I used it with the Booster Gold series. It's just delightful. Nock's art is the driving force for me on the book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and we talked about this on the Spring Break special, how I think I used the term liquid joy.
Yep.
It's just, you know, he can do, he does emotion, he does storytelling, he's got all the chops, but his art is joyous. And in the moments where it needs to be joyous, it's really joyous. And he draws kids really well. So this was a perfect mini for him. And I want to give the colorist a huge shout out too. He does such a great job of pairing with Nock and again, bringing that brightness, bringing that joy into the work. And so I just, you know, overwhelmingly, I have a real fondness for this whole run, the Spring Break special, all the way through this book. And it's augmented by having now watched the Stargirl series, because they do a really good job of marrying the Courtney Whitmore we watched grow up in comics, right? She starts in Stars and Stripes and she's a petulant thief. I mean, she steals Sylvester Pemberton's, you know, belt and becomes a hero against everybody's wishes, you know, ends up proving herself in the end, joins the JSA, still kind of a petulant brat, you know, poking at Jack Knight, and then grows to become the heart and soul of the JSA and the person, the character where you go, yeah, that's the future leader of this group, right? Like that's the breakout character. And they meld it perfectly with the Courtney Whitmore we get to know in the Stargirl TV show, who's got a lot of those same traits. She's definitely not the petulant streak, but has a lot of those same traits of being a real, you know, heroine, a strong character, a caring character who cares deeply for her friends and family and feels really conflicted when she can't protect them or tell them the truth. And it's just a beautiful marriage of the two. So I really loved this mini. I was really excited by, you know, the news of it, and then it really delivered. What about you?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. Todd Nock's art, you're right, is the heart and the joy of this. But I there's a couple different things. There's the art and then the opportunity to play with legacy, which is one of Geoff Johns' greatest strengths, is he's so good at playing with legacy. And here he gets to create some of his own. So he's getting to build and new ideas on existing concepts. You know, these teen sidekicks that never existed, that suddenly now, you know, a Human Bomb having a sidekick, Red Bee having a sidekick, those types of things. That's a great area for Johns to play in, and he excels in it. And then Todd Nock's art, as you mentioned, I don't need to repeat what you said. I co-sign every bit of it. And one of the things, too, that I think works well is the Stargirl series, whether it be the TV series or the comics, were always about family. That's really where it was grounded. Now here, Courtney's family isn't there, but you sort of see Courtney build a found family around her. So you still get that family sense, which is interesting that it's just kind of hidden in there. And unless you really think about it, you don't even notice it, but she builds a found family. And so you still feel this connection of them standing up for each other, taking up for each other, worrying about hurting each other's feelings. Like, she spends a lot of time worrying about Red Arrow's feelings and what Red Arrow's going through. So I think they found a perfect way to meld a lot of that.
Yeah, and it's a really nice character-driven book. I think you and I both agree on one thing, is for a critique. It didn't necessarily need to be a 6-issue mini.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely the story, you know, in the middle. I won't say it sags because it's fun and it's a good read. There's no negative there. It just definitely takes its time kind of getting where it's going. But I like that because the payoff is big, because, you know, Emiko, the Red Arrow, she's not a character. Do you have any familiarity with her?
Zero. I didn't even know she existed until the Stargirl Spring Break special we read.
Yeah, she's a new 52 slash like DC Rebirth. So, like, you know, 20. I don't remember exactly which era. I think she's a Rebirth character. But anyway, very recent.
Apparently she was like on a whole season of Arrow that we missed as well. So she's out there in the public consciousness. We're just old men screaming at clouds who have no idea who she is. So.
Well, she's Ollie's sister, so they, you know, they have the same father, and she was, you know, she says in the mini, you know, she's kidnapped and she's raised on Starfish Island where Ollie was held, you know, and it's part of this big plot, and they kind of hand wave it away just to give you a little background. But I have very limited exposure to this character. The only time I ever saw her was a couple of random Teen Titans comics I happen to have from the Rebirth era where Damian is leading the team, and it's like Damian and Red Arrow. It's this weird collection of misfit toys, and in those couple of issues, and this is unfair because I'm painting her with a broad brush, but she's like a killer hero. She's super violent, and, you know, I think she may be related to Shadow from the Green Arrow series, you know, who was an assassin for the Yakuza.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, very violent character, kind of in that, you know,
she's the Cassandra Crane for the Green Arrow universe is the gist I got.
Perfect comparison. So that's the only thing I've ever known her about her, and so I've had zero interest in her as a character. I've been like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need another, you know, killer hero, you know, whatever. It's all the Jason Todd of the Arrow family, or, you know, Cassandra Cain's a great example. And then I read this mini and I was like, oh my God, I love this character. Like, like there's a great character arc for her because she tells us in the mini, you know, that she was kidnapped as a baby. She was brought to Starfish Island, where, you know, the island where Green Arrow was formed, basically. And she was raised to be an assassin in a revenge plot. And she starts crying and she's like, you know, no one ever came for me. No one ever came looking for me because no one knew who I was or even existed. She can rationalize it, but she's very traumatized by this, right? And she's like, and now all these other kids are missing, and what if no one goes looking for them? And it's this beautiful moment. Not only, one, is this the character hook for me for this character who I now really like, but Courtney looks at her and feels this real responsibility of like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go on this adventure, not only because it's the right thing to do, but this person really needs me. They need a friend, and I'm going to step up and be that friend for her, even though it's going to get me in trouble with my parents, even though, you know, it's going to put my life at risk. And it was such a nice character beat where I got to know this Red Arrow character in a way that I've never known her, and then just reinforced why Courtney Whitmore is one of the great, you know, characters of the DC universe.
And I think a lot of what you just hit on is ties back to our criticism, which is it is a very, very decompressed story. Like you said, it didn't need six issues. Yeah. I'm not even sure it needed four, honestly. However, because of the character moments, they gave us a ton of meaningful character moments, and they had to introduce 5,000 sidekicks. You know, so they needed the space. They needed to breathe across six issues. So that was good enough for me. Again, when you plot it out, not a lot happens. But again, the character moments were worth it. All the ones you mentioned with Red Arrow, all the little bits where you learn a little bit more about the characters, and then the Todd Knox side of it. Like, I could honestly, even if you remove all the word balloons from this, I would still spend hours just poring over this to look at all these Todd Knox pages. And he got to do so many insane group shots where it's like, I don't know, 40 characters on a page. And it looks glorious. It's exactly what you want to see from a superhero comic. You know, it's one of those, I'm sorry to compare it to George Perez, but, you know, George Perez was famous for doing the giant group shot of like 50 characters, right? And Todd pulls it off with the pacing and the layout and the setting of it where you just like where everyone is. It all makes sense. And then there's all kinds of stuff going on in the background. Like, characters are doing things. You're like, oh, that's clearly not in the script. That's him playing with their character traits. Oh, look, you know, Salem's being crappy to somebody, you know, or whatever. And it's all right there in the art.
I'm so glad you brought up the backgrounds. This is so such a weird thing to focus on, but, you know, and I understand it. I'm not critiquing it, but quite often pencilers, you know, to save time, which is understandable because it's a grueling job, will skimp on the backgrounds, right? You know, a lot of John Byrne, you know, Reed Richards against a pink panel kind of thing. And again, totally understand it. It's a necessary part of being a penciler, and I'm, you know, not critiquing it. But holy crap, does Todd Knock pack this book? You're right. There's so many character bits happening in the background that are amazing, and little details that really lend itself to the richness of the story. But it feels so full. It does. It is Perezian. I mean, I think you made the right comparison because it feels so packed to the gills with, like, it lends itself to rereading because it's so packed with moments and with little bits in the art where you're like, oh, wait, I didn't even notice this. You know, they go to visit the Arrow Cave at one point and there's all these statues of, you know, the Seven Soldiers and of all these villains. And there's a couple of them where I'm like, I have no idea who that is. I wonder if that's a new villain that John's created. And, you know, that looks really cool. There are a couple of, you know, statues. There's like Black Canary, Green Lantern, and then there's a young girl with a bow and arrow. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I know who that is because it's not Mia. That's not Speedy.
Right. So I kept thinking, is that Arrowette? If okay, but really, is it? You know, and
well, she had no connection to the Arrow family. Remember, you know, she was an Impulse character.
Oh, okay, okay.
And so yeah, and so there's just, again, such detail, such rich detail that it really does feel like, even though the story is literally A to B to C, you know, Stargirl and the Emiko go look for the lost children, they find them on this island, they fight the bad guys, and they save the day. Like, it's really a very basic plot. The art makes it feel like it's such a rich reading experience that I just, you know, it reminds you why this is a visual medium.
Yeah. Now, all right, let's clear the decks and get the complaining out of the way, because the rest of this is just going to be heaping on praise, okay?
Yes.
Just want to be clear, folks. We're going to be absolutely adoring, starry-eyed teenagers in love with this thing. But there is, okay, you mentioned that didn't need to be six issues. I've got another hang up with something, which is the, like, everything is great until like the big reveals, and it leaves you kind of scratching your head like, what happened? Like, huh? So I actually had to piece this together. Well, you ask your questions, and then I'll tell you what I pieced together.
Yeah, it is definitely, this is one of those stories where you go, wait, what? Why did you do this? That doesn't make any sense. And you're like, ah, whatever. It's still fun.
There you go. That's how most of this read was for me. It's like, why did that happen? Because when I got done, I tried to describe the story to myself and I couldn't. So I don't know what some of it was. So it was like, but I don't care. I had so much fun and the art was great. And I love where the story ended. And so anyway, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I would start, you know, let's just start with plot holes or issues with the plot. So, Shaq, how did the kids get to the island?
Okay, so I was very fuzzy on this at first. Then, and shout out to Martin Gray, friend of our network, right? I went out to his blog where he covered this series. And then in the comment section, him and one of his commenters tried to figure it out, too. So clearly, we aren't the only ones. So here's how this works, folks. Again, major spoilers. And some of this ties back to Flashpoint Beyond. Some of this ties back to the new Golden Age special, but so there were these 13 characters that were apparently tossed out of continuity by Flashpoint. A lot of them are these teenage sidekicks. Some of them are other people like the Golden Age Aquaman or the Red Lantern, things like that. But these 13 people are tossed out of continuity by Flashpoint, apparently. Time Masters rescue them, put them in this little stasis chamber. Basically, their goal is to eventually, once the timeline settles down, they're going to reinsert them into history. Because apparently that's a job. I don't know how you apply for that job, and I'm not sure what on your resume requires you to be able to qualify, but whatever. So then there's some sort of attack on the Time Masters lab that allows
which
this
we
character.
Don't see.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was unseen. So this childminder, who's like a time scavenger, or she calls herself the angel that history's forgotten, she captures the children somehow, and she takes them to Orphan Island, and her goal is she's going to sell them to Our Man, the android Our Man, in exchange for her youth back, because she's grown old. All right, that makes sense. Gotcha. All right. But why is Our Man evil? Well, because he's been manipulated by this adult Corky, who's this teenage, obnoxious Time Master kid, and his adult version from the future. I feel like it's kind of like the Matthew Hunter stuff with that they did years ago. But anyway,
yep.
Young Corky is on Orphan Island for one reason. He is there to make sure Wing from the Seven Soldiers goes back to his proper time in history and dies stopping the Nebula Man in that famous Justice League comic. Okay, got it. The adult Corky is there to make sure that happens as well. And he wants the kids to stay on Orphan Island to protect and keep the timeline stable. So Childminder's a bad guy. Our Man's being reprogrammed by Corky, and adult Corky's kind of a bad guy, but really is trying to protect the timeline, but he's being a dick by doing it.
Overly complicated.
It really is. And there's a whole bunch of continuity stuff where they spend time talking about Flashpoint and Flashpoint Beyond and Doomsday Clock, and I'm like, it has been 12 years since Flashpoint happened. Why are we still obsessed with this? Why are we obsessed with putting labels on various parallel timelines? Just tell a good story and say it's an alternate continuity. Who cares?
Okay, so there's so much to unpack in what you just talked about. But I'm going to start with that last point because John's this is such a weird and again, it sounds like we don't like it. I loved this mini and it's a mini I'll go back to but there's a certain point where it's all about Emiko and Stargirl and the lost children, and then you get to issue 4. So it's taken the bulk of the mini and Corky. No one good has ever been named Corky. Like it's just no one good has ever worn a raccoon skin hat and been named Corky. Like this kid, it's like Geoff Johns said, well, I put Superboy Prime to bed. Now I need to create my next great annoying character everybody hates and I have a weird obsession with. Like it's on Corky is like on par with Danny Chase from the New Titans era. Like he's so annoying. Like Cousin Oliver, he's so annoying. And so Corky comes into the Lost Children. These poor kids have been on this island for decades. And he sits down and he's like, I'm Corky. I'm a Time Master. I'm great. Look at me. You know, listen to me. And then he just does this exposition dump that would clog the toilet of time forever. Like, it is it is unbelievable. And it is – and I have to say again, as much as I love this series – I cannot decide if this is Geoff Johns. There's three options here. It's Johns just like trying to remind everybody of his brilliance and showing everybody what he's been doing the last 10 years where everybody's been like, what the hell are you doing? It's Johns taking the piss out of himself, you know, kind of tongue in cheek. Or it's Johns just like, this was the plan all along. I'm going to plow through, but I'm not going to give it too much attention because Corky tells this story. And you talked about it, but you know, the Time Masters are going through time in a time bubble. They go by Barry Allen as he creates Flashpoint. They see all of Flashpoint, and then they're bumped into what is called the Divine Continuity. I really want to get to the name of it. You know, DC, the Divine Continuity. And we get this little like scribble or
chalkboard. You
know, chalkboard. Oh yeah, chalkboard. A Geoff Johns chalkboard of the Divine Continuity with the D and C capitalized, and it points to space and time. And space is the Omniverse, and it's made up of the Multiverse. So there you get Crisis. And then the Metaverse. So there you get the recently completed Dark Crisis, which I read and couldn't tell you a single thing about. You get the Dark Multiverse. So you get Dark Knights, Death Metal, you know, whatever. You get the Sphere of the Gods, which was from Final Crisis, the whole Grant Morrison thing. And then you get a time section, and it's got Limbo, which is necessary, you know, because that's where the Time Masters are. And you've got the Vanishing Point, but you also have Hyper Time, which is Kingdom Come, which is the kingdom. So what Johns is doing is taking all of the, like, universe-shattering events of the DC Universe of the last 40 years, and he's kind of putting them all in one place. And he's saying, like, hey, it all happened. It all matters. Just to, and part of me is like, okay, I'm kind of cool with this. He's saying, you know, in a way, he's saying, like, have fun with this. If you liked Hyper Time, if you liked that Mark Waid stuff, that's all still there. If you loved pre-Crisis Multiverse, that's all still there. You know, if you're a more recent fan and you're really into Dark Knight's death metal, that's all still there. It's all the Divine Continuity. Everything's good. But it's so weirdly out of place in this mini, which is about characters searching for characters who've been displaced. And then he has to go a step further, and he has to tie it to frickin' Doomsday Clock and Flashpoint Beyond. Doomsday Clock, we're not going to get into it, obviously.
No, we're not.
I read it. So I started reading Doomsday Clock. I was actively angry about the first few issues, but I'm an idiot junkie comic book collector, so I kept buying the issues. And eventually, the writing, Johns is a great writer, Gary Frank is a great artist, the craft won me over in that I treat it as an Elseworlds story. I do not see it as an incontinuity. And as is an Elseworlds story, I go, oh yeah, it was good. I get it. I liked it. Cool. But it doesn't need to be shoved into the DC universe in any way. But Johns is going to do it, damn it. And then Flashpoint Beyond was literally about Batman holding a snow globe going, I miss my dead dad from the Flashpoint universe. I want to redeem him. I'm going to shake this snow globe and make it happen. I wish I was kidding. And then the Time Masters come at the end and take this super powerful snow globe, which I don't understand how it's super powerful. But I have to ask you, does this add anything to this mini?
No. Okay. So, I'll let you get to your bit. So, no, it does not add anything to the mini, except for someone. All right. Let me go back in time. In 1995, when Zero Hour came out, I was 23 years old, and boy, did I care about continuity. I mean, I really did. Like, how did this Hawkman fit in with this piece of the continuity? I mean, I was that guy. So 23-year-old Shag would have probably eaten up this. And to be fair, I'm looking at issue number 4. It's only 2 pages. Like, you know, we're talking about a 6-issue miniseries, and we're hyper-focusing on 2 pages because it irritated us. But it really is only 2 pages.
Yeah, but I mean, to call it the Divine Continuity, is it? So that's my second question. Is it John's? Is it tongue in cheek? Is it him just trying to justify what he's done for the last few years, or is it John's trying to reclaim, like, I'm the organizer of the DC universe, you know? And what do you think is the impulse here?
I don't think it's hubris on John's part at all. No, I don't think that's the case. I do like the D and the C. They're actually circled. They are the DC logo. I mean, they're literally the modern DC logos. So it's not just the letters; it's also the logo, which is clever. I don't think it's hubris. I don't think it's ego. I think he's just trying to play the game of saying, like you said, it all fits. It all matters, y'all. Don't get worked up because whoever did death metal, and then I did this, and someone else did this, and, you know, Mark Waid did, you know, Hyper Time, and, like, hey, you know what? It's all good. It all works. I think that's what it is. Now, he did get focused on Flashpoint and Flashpoint Beyond a lot, which yeah. I think is a little much. I don't know why we're still talking about it. But, no, I think the chalkboard and the Divine Continuity is simply, and I don't even know if this is where it was introduced. For all I know, it was introduced in Flashpoint Beyond. I don't know. But either way, I think it's just laying it all out there saying, hey, it all matters, folks.
Yeah, and I have to say, because he, you know, and he, you know, because he doesn't give it too much page, you know, too much real estate. You know, there's a couple pages later about Batman and the Flashpoint Beyond mini. I do think it's him. If the whole mini had been about it and revealing it and all of that stuff, then yeah, I think it would have been kind of an ego trip. But I do think it's him just saying like, hey, here's this cool little idea I had. The rest of the story is more important and more fun, but I want to just at least dip into it. Yeah. I think part of my aversion to it, and I'm not averse to the idea because I'm like, cool, I want everything to matter. I'm an old comic book fan and I like that my comic books, you know, happened. I'm cool with it. But it's just the fact that Corky's the one who introduces it.
Yeah.
And he's so abrasive and he really is the Superboy Prime of this mini. Like, he's so annoying that I can't help but be a little annoyed by the divine continuity of it all. And John's had to know that as a writer. So I also wonder if there's not a little bit of tongue in cheek in there. So, you know, it's definitely not the big focus of the issue. It makes me a little worried. It might be the big focus of his like JSA series he's doing or other stuff down the road. But
well, that snow globe has played a big part in the JSA series so far.
It has. Yes. Yeah. Never has a snow. Not since the finale of Saint Elsewhere has a snow globe played as big a role in ending a universe. But sorry, that's a reference only.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah. So it's definitely a weird choice, and you know, it's odd. So that's one of the complaints, and maybe not even a real complaint.
Before I move on from Corky, I do have a thought. So I don't mind teenage Corky being annoying, because I'm the guy that likes reading about Guy Gardner. So I don't mind the annoying character, and I'm fine with young Corky. My issue became adult Corky being the big bad, essentially. Yeah. And I have in my mind, you know, and sorry to try and play armchair comic nerd and tell you what you should have done, but like I have an alternative solution that I think would have been really elegant and worked really well. Like, I don't think you have to change anything with teenage Corky, but instead of being adult Corky at the end, if it had been the time lost, forgotten sidekick of Perdegaton.
Oh,
as the big bad, that would have made so much thematic sense. So the story is all about all the teenage sidekicks that have been forgotten. It's all about time travel. You know, the JSA villain with time travel is Perdegaton, and the idea of giving him a time forgotten sidekick, which would be perfect, because every time Perdegaton's beaten, his history is rewritten every single time. So having in one of those many times he'd had a sidekick, it would have been perfect. I think that would have been elegant. It would have just worked really well. But
That's a brilliant idea. That's a really good idea, and it does play into the fact that one of the other areas of sort of complaint are the villains in this book. Since you talked about Corky, let's start with him. I like to call his adult self Corkle, because he's Corky and Cable. I mean, he's Cable. It's okay. Not even subtle. He comes back in. He's like Corky Baxter, Time Master. I mean, he might as well have one robotic eye, you know, transmode virus and pouches. And it's what's funny is he's like basically back to do what his teen self was doing. Like it's a weird convoluted plot where it's like, why did you need to reprogram our man? And why did the child minder need to be there? Like all you needed to do was grab Wing and throw him back in the timeline. It seems massively overcomplicated. But the one thing I do like about Corkle that I'll give him is what John's is setting up with Rip Hunter at the end, and where Rip Hunter is so mean to Corky. Like, first of all, Corky shouldn't be a time master. You shouldn't have a, you know, teenage or preteen kid with any sort of access to the time stream. I mean, at one point, I don't remember if it's in this mini or if it's in the Golden Age one shot, the JSA one shot, where he's talking to John Wilkes Booth.
Yep.
as a kid. And he's like, hey, don't go assassinating anybody. Yeah, everybody will remember your name, but don't do it. And John Wilkes Booth is like, everyone will know my name. And you're like, oh, did Corky cause the assassination of Abraham Lincoln? Like,
yes,
what?
He did.
He did. And so, you know, shame on the adults for even having him in the time sphere. But Rip Hunter is such a jack to Corky. And he's like, you know, to be a time master means you don't get friends, you don't get family, you have no loved ones, you're, you know. And it's really the Corkle of it all is the fact that Rip Hunter's programming works, that Corky becomes a, you know, uncaring, unloving jerk who will, you know, sacrifice the happiness of all these children to make sure the time stream is saved. And he's not 100% wrong, but he's, you know, he's just kind of a jerk about it. So I like that element of it. But other than that, I mean, do you find him to be a compelling villain?
No. Part of me even wonders if something changed halfway through. Because in that Golden Age story, there's a page where it shows the lost children, and there's a shadow of somebody, and it looks like it's Perdegaton. Like, I still think that Perdegaton or somebody was going to be the villain in this, and it almost feels like it got changed. I don't know. Maybe it didn't. Either way, I don't want to spend too much more time on Corkle, because I want to celebrate the good stuff. So, because that piece, again, I couldn't tell you why things happened. I had to research after I read it to go, why did this happen? Why, you know, again, I followed it like a roller coaster. I had so much fun. And then when I had to think, it's when I got ready for this podcast and I had to go back and explain the story, that's when I realized it didn't make any sense. And the adult Corky makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, and then the childminder is a really cool visual, like knocks it out of the park, pardon pun. But it looks like, I put a picture in our notes. Do you remember the chicken lady from Kids in the Hall?
I don't. I looked at that picture though. And yeah, there's a lot of similarity between the chicken lady and
I mean, at one point they even call the childminder chicken lady. She is like seriously a woman and a chicken mixed in one, and looks like the chicken lady. I mean, if you ever have a chance to go back and watch a clip from Kids in the Hall, chicken lady skits are really funny, and she looks just like her. And then her eggs look like Nanny and the Orphan Maker eggs from the X-Men. So there's some funny stuff going on there, but she's a cool visual. But again, I don't know, you know, she doesn't have a very compelling motivation.
Well, I would disagree. First of all, like the visual I thought was a little strange. I'm like, that's a weird looking creature. You know, it's very bird-like. I was thinking chicken as well. But then in one panel where she's being nasty with, I think it's Red Arrow, she explains that, or maybe it's Secret. Either way, she explains that she is the foundation of the author who came up with Old Mother Goose. Old Mother Goose was based on her. And so the idea that she is Old Mother Goose taking care of children, like, oh, I thought that was like, that is genius, actually. So now once we got that moment, I loved the childminder's design. I love the eggs. I love the nesting. I thought it was all very clever. So I'm actually a big fan of the childminder. And the whole idea was she wanted her youth back and, you know, stealing kids out of time, our man who has time powers. That all makes sense. So I'm totally in the corner of childminder. I don't know that there's any more childminder story to tell, but in this particular instance, I absolutely love the childminder.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that, because I thought, you know, compelling visual, not so compelling a story. Though I do like that moment where she's like, you know, I was born like this, and my parents abandoned me, so I want to save abandoned children. I was like, oh, okay, that's I like that part. You know, and then this is where I think we'll segue from the what we maybe didn't love to what we did love. One of the other quote unquote villains, which I was so excited to see, is the Android Hourman from DC 1 million, and then the brilliant Tom Payer Rags Morales. It's funny, in the Stargirl Spring Break special, we actually talk about that book really
quickly.
We do. We talk about how much we love the Android Hourman, so it was really cool that he is back in continuity now because of this book.
And bizarrely, before, I hadn't even read this miniseries yet. I didn't know Hourman was in it. I actually was reading the Hourman series by Tom Payer again very recently.
Oh,
so I was reading that and just enjoying it and celebrating it, and then I read this, and I'm like, well, what? So at first, when the Hourman shows up and is evil, I lost my crap. I was like,
yeah, me too.
What? I was so mad. And then I should have just stayed calm. You know, I think they wanted us to be outraged, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Because the next issue, John starts celebrating him, right? You see some great shots of him with his time ship and the JSA. And they're like, oh, no, he was a hero. We don't know what's going on. I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then when he gets fixed by issue 6, they pull his brain out and they fix his brain. So by the end, we've got our Hourman back. And he's already appeared in a few places since then. So in other comics. So that made me very happy to have him back. Absolutely. Such a great character.
Yeah. Awesome character. Awesome chance to bring him back into continuity. So you know, and like you said, I was really angry too. I was like, you can't make him what are you doing? You can't make him a villain. And then, the way they fix him is so funny, because Judy Garrick vibrates his brain out of his android body, his android brain. And there are all these characters from the 40s looking at this, like, 23rd century or actually 33rd century nanotech or whatever it is.
853rd, I think is what
There you go. And they're like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. And the Quiz Kid, the Mr. Terrific's sidekick, is like, well, that thing looks different than the other things. And he, like, basically just pulls out a USB out of his brain. And then it's like, oh, he's back. Okay, he's fixed. So it was really cute. The way they save him is cute. I love that he's back. I love that, you know, Johns is dipping back into that continuity. So that's the, you know, the slide into the things we loved is definitely one of the huge strengths of this book. is the new characters and the old characters brought back. So do you want to jump to that, since that's such a big selling point of this book?
Absolutely. So I'll rattle off, there's a lot of characters to say here, folks, so bear with me. I'll rattle off first the new characters, and then the pre-existing characters that they brought back as well, many of which I didn't even know existed, dude, until I started doing the research. So first off, the biggest one that's getting probably the most amount of attention is Jay Garrick's daughter named Judy Garrick, who goes by The Boom. So The Flash and The Boom, Thunder and Lightning, that kind of thing. So she's the sidekick to the Golden Age Flash. Then you get Cherry Bomb, who is the sidekick to the Human Bomb. You get John Henry Jr., who's the sort of a sidekick, more like a successor to the John Henry from The New Frontier. You get Ladybug, who is sidekick to the Red Bee. You get Betsy Ross and Molly Pitcher, who are sidekicks to Miss America. Then you get Quiz Kid, who is the sidekick of Mr. Terrific. And you get Salem the Witch Girl, who were sidekicks to Dr. Fate. Now, all of these characters existed supposedly in the 1940s and were pulled out of time and were forgotten so that they never existed. But now they're being reinserted back into continuity, and other characters are beginning to remember they existed. So, like, just talk like Ladybug. They're like, oh, you know what? People remember now that she disappeared and was never seen again, and her parents searched for her all the way into the 80s. Then they died of old age, you know, heartbroken, things like that. So those are the newly created characters. Now, there's more people from Geoff Johns, you know, the 13, I mentioned Golden Age, Aquaman, stuff like that. I'm not going to get into all those, but there are other characters. Then they introduced a whole bunch of other pre-existing teenage sidekick characters. For example, they introduced Robbie the Robot Dog, who is a sidekick to Robot Man. Dude, I totally thought he was created for this miniseries until I did the research.
Me too.
Goes back to 1944. Had no idea. Then we get Tick-Tock, who is a sidekick to Hour Man, also from 1940. However, in his case, he was one of Hour Man's Minutemen who were just regular kids. He didn't wear a costume back in the 1940s. So while the character of James Martin existed in 1940, this is the first time they've given him a costume. So that one's got a little bit of a flavor to it. Then you get Pinky the Whiz Kid, which I was sure was made up, but no.
I was too.
He is truthfully the sidekick to Mr. Scarlet and appeared in 1941, which is absolutely crazy. Then Sparky, who is the sidekick to the Golden Age Blue Beetle. Again, how the hell did I not know this character existed? But yeah, he was around in 1942. News to me. Had no idea that Dan Garrett had a sidekick. Then you get some ones that we all recognize a little more, obviously, because they were in Who's Who, and they kind of grew up with them being talked about later. You get Airwave, who's a teenager again for some reason. You get Dan the Dynamite, who's the sidekick to TNT. So he's back. He was a major player in
Young
All-Stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to mention something about his character real quick. There was, early on, we're in Dan's house as he's a senior citizen, and they've got photos hanging up of Young Justice. They got photos hanging up of Old Justice. That made me so happy.
I loved the Young All-Stars book. The first year of that book when Brian Murray's on art is just fantastic. And once he leaves, Roy dips into his Royness, and the book gets pretty dry. But the first year of that book is fantastic, and that book opens with the death of TNT, which haunts Dan that whole series. So that was a big moment for me as a young collector. And so for them to revisit it and then have the picture of the Young All-Stars, who no one has cared about for decades, made me so happy. And then seeing Old Justice from the young Justice series, it was just such a nice, again, dip into continuity. It was a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of Young Justice dips into continuity, another character who's in here who really doesn't fit, except for Todd Knox doing the art, is Secret from one of the members of Young Justice. Was a ghost girl named Secret, and she is back. Apparently she was also taken out of continuity, I guess, and now she is back, so I'm thrilled with that. We also get Wing, who is the sidekick to the Crimson Avenger, one of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. You get Red Arrow. We've talked quite a bit about her. Emiko. You got Corky. Then you get the Newsboy Legion, who you get all six of them. I did not know there was a sixth one. I knew about five of them, but they're one of the characters is a girl character named Famous Bobby. And I thought, again, she was made up for this. Turns out, no, she was introduced back in 1994.
Okay.
And then you get the Blue Boys, which has Little Blue Boy and his two sidekicks. And again, there's a fourth one, Little Miss Redhead. Again, I thought she was made up for this. Nope, she goes all the way back to 1947. So, a lot of characters there. So why don't we talk about the pre-existing ones first, and then we can go into the new ones. So did you have any standout characters from the pre-existing ones?
Yeah, so I because I'm such a fan of the Golden Age four-issue mini by James Robinson and Paul Smith, the minute I saw Robbie the Robot Dog, I was like, oh my God, does he have Hitler's brain? Like, does he have, You know, is Eichmann in there, or, you know, Goebbels? Like I was immediately suspicious of Robbie the robot dog because of that. But I do love the idea of a robotic dog. And I have to say, my wife and I, early into our marriage, when we were talking about whether we'd have kids or not, we were like, no, we're not ready for that. Then we're like, what about a dog? We're like, we don't know if we're ready for that. So we bought a robotic dog to see if we were ready for it. And it died. We literally killed a robot dog. And so that was a fun little trip down memory lane. But yeah, so I have a couple of standouts. One, mm-hmm. I was so happy to see Secret again. Mm-hmm. I love that Young Justice series. And then they do, you know, Young Justice, the cartoon, you know, addressed this character too, because her background is violent. Like, she's brutally murdered by her brother.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
In like a satanic ritual. I mean, she has actually a really dark background, but she was a great character in Young Justice. So I was super excited to get her back. I was surprised to see Airwave because I'm like, wasn't he Mazer in Firestorm? Yeah.
Yes, he was. I'm glad I'm not the only one who remembers that. I wasn't going to mention it, but yay, you made my heart sing. Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, Mazer, male laser? I don't know. You know, is that a hair removal product? So my absolute favorite was Sparky. I had no idea the Blue Beetle had a sidekick. And the fact that he introduces himself as Sparkington J. Northrup, I was like, that's why I thought it was a joke. I was like, are they making fun of, like, James Buchanan Barnes? Like, the fact that his superhero name comes from his name? But it's so funny because at one moment, he introduces himself again, and he's like, I'm Sparkington J. Northrup. He's like, family name. You know, like, he's so used to people probably making fun of it. So I really liked this, you know, obviously aristocratic kid. I don't know, you know, did Kaji Da, did the Scarab have a little Scarab, baby Scarab? Like, I don't know his story at all, but I want more of Sparkington J. Northrup. What about you?
So I guess I have to separate it into, like you said, what I want more of versus who I think we'll see more of. Like, I definitely want Sparky is probably the one I want to see the most of as well. Because Blue Beetle, I mean, I'm totally invested in the legacy of Blue Beetle. I'm like dying to know more. Other characters, I really like TikTok, who's the sidekick to Hourman. I have such a soft spot for the Hourman character. I mean, not just the android, but Rex Tyler and Rick Tyler, and now TikTok's in my heart too. And I mean, just it's all there. So I immediately was drawn to him. I thought Robbie the robot dog was adorable. Dan the Dynamite, I adore that character. So I don't know if there's more to tell there. I guess they're going to keep him a teenager, which is, you know, going to be different for him. So as far as who I think, and everything you said about Secret was just, I remember the character. I read all of Young Justice. I just didn't remember her backstory. So when you were telling me that stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't remember because it's been so many years since I've read it. But so the ones I think we'll see more of again, based on how much we saw them in this series, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Robbie the Robot Dog and TikTok. And probably Secret. And that may be it. Like, I don't know that we'd see on a reoccurring basis Pinky or Sparky or Airwave. Although, maybe Airwave. All right, so maybe I'll throw Airwave into the mix, too. And I don't know if Red Arrow would belong on, you know, on this. And we're talking about specifically this Young Justice Society team is what I'm talking about here. Yeah.
I think she'll be on it. Yeah.
You think so? Okay. So who do you think from the existing characters will make it to the Young Justice Society?
TikTok, definitely. He has a great costume. His power's so lame. Five minutes.
5 minutes of super strength.
I mean, 5 minute Miraclo. I mean, it's the 5 hour energy of the 40s. Like you know, I just, you know, and shame on Rex Tyler for creating kid junkies. Like, I just, so, you know, TikTok, I think, is definitely there. Dan the Dynamite's definitely going to be there.
Okay.
You know, Secret will definitely be there. And I think Red Arrow too. So, you know, some of them, you know, the Newsboy Legion, it's funny because Courtney even mentions, Emiko goes, do you know those guys? She's like, well, they're clones. I know they're clones. And she's like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, I loved the Newsboy Legion clones from the Superman, the Cadmus era.
Right.
That was great. Carl Kiesel, you know, those were great characters. And so, you know, but I don't think any of those guys are coming in. But yeah, Robbie the Robot Dog's too hard to pass up. And then, you know, TikTok and Dan and Secret. So those would be, and Red Arrow would be my choices. I do have to say, Little Miss Redhead, I was like, oh, this is weird. Like that's a weird, stupid superhero name. I mean, Little Boy Blue's no better. Mm-hmm. But I saw in your notes that she had been created in 1947, I was like, man, that there's a weird perviness to the, like, the look and the whip and everything. And I'm like, that's edgy for 1947. And then I remembered, oh yeah, Wonder Woman.
Right.
Oh yeah, never mind, forgot. So I think those characters definitely got a lot of the spotlight, though I would love to see Sparky as well.
Well, I did feel like Little Miss Redhead got a lot of the the focus. So at one point, I thought maybe she could be a character to carry on, but they're like, well, they need more female characters. And I started thinking about, oh, you know what? Almost all the new characters they created actually are female. So I don't know that, you know, I think it'll already be female heavy. So let's talk about the new characters here. All right. So the big one is the Boom. That's the one that I think they expect to be the breakout character. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's so, I think I mentioned this on the Spring Break special 2 years ago. One of my, I love Jay Garrick. Jay Garrick is one of my all-time favorite characters. And one of the things I love about Jay Garrick is he was tragedy free. He, you know, his parents weren't killed in an alley and he wasn't, you know, shot here from, you know, space. He went on a smoke break and some chemicals washed over him and he had weird hard water powers. Like some, you know, okay, cool. And he, you know, he was a member of the JSA. And then as he got older, he was a mentor to the new heroes. And then, you know, he's grandpa to Wally's kids. And I love that. And so Johns at one point in his JSA series in the 90s gives some pathos to Jay and Joan Garrick by saying they always wanted children and they couldn't have any of their own. And it was a real sore, like, you know, something they really struggled with. And that's why they sort of adopt the hero community. And so I love that they're filling that gap for them, you know, that they wanted children, thought they couldn't have them, but really they did. And maybe that longing was more than just the longing, you know, because they thought they couldn't have kids, but was longing because they did have a kid who was time lost. So there's a real resonance for me here. And I'm really excited to get to know Judy Garrick more.
I want to co-sign everything you said there. Jay is one of my absolute favorite characters. And so the fact that Jay and Joan have this opportunity, and I love the idea that Judy's from 1963 and she used to run back in time to 1940 to hang out with dad when he was young. So I love that time lost idea right from the start. So she was a sidekick 23 years in the past, which is such a weird, fun idea. And now she's suddenly going to be the sidekick, you know, 40 years in the future. So it'll be interesting to see that play out. I hope that Jay is accepting of her, you know, and not been...
Oh, yeah.
Well, sometimes when you get the time loss thing, like, oh, I don't know if I believe you. Depends on what the writer wants to do. But I think I think she'll absolutely be accepted in. And I hope she stays around. Now, the only criticism I have, and it's not of the character, it's of the character's creation. Because, like, how many teen speedsters do we have at this point, right?
So many Flashes.
I mean, we've had Wally as Kid Flash. We had Jesse Quick. We had the Tornado Twins. We had Impulse. We had Excess. We had Wally's daughter, Iris. We had Wallace West. And there's a whole bunch more that got introduced recently. So, like, there's more teen speedsters than there have been Robins, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Now, Judy is different because she has this unique connection to Jay. So her creation is, you know, it's something new, something interesting, and that's fine. But I wish future writers, instead of creating their own new character that they can say they create, I'd rather at least they look back and pull some of those characters forward, like they've done with Spoiler or Tim Drake, where they've said, oh, let's bring these characters back and do something with them. I at least wish we'd see them pull back Jesse Quick. Let's do something with her. Now, she did get a lot done as Liberty Bell, but, you know, there's other ones out. Excess, you know, what's going on there? Like, when's the last time we saw Impulse? You know, all that stuff. So, anyway, I'm excited for Judy, though. I think she's going to be great. And I know from here, and we should have mentioned, by the way, the way the series ended, it says you'll see Young Justice Society next in Justice Society of America number 6, which is due out in a few short weeks when this comes out. So we're going to make predictions and be proven wrong almost immediately. So that's perfect.
I do want to mention one other thing about Judy Garrick. If she were a little older, we would actually know exactly when she was conceived as well, because there is that very funny panel from that All-Star Squadron annual where Joan Garrick wants to go with Jay to this mission. It's the Ian Carcoal. It's how they explain why they don't age.
Okay.
And she says, take me with you. And he's like, or what? She's like, or I'll tell your friends that running's not the only thing you do at super speed. Like, implying that he, you know, maybe had some trouble with getting out the gate a little early. And so it's really funny because, you know, there's this heavy implication that they had slept together already. So immediately when I saw Judy Garrick, I thought back to that panel and I was like, oh, we actually might even know when she was conceived.
Oh my God. Gosh. All right, moving away from that awkward information.
Oh, come on. It was also Ian Carcoal, who you and I have a weird strange effect.
Oh, yeah. I've had enough of him. So so the other new characters, I'm going to run through their names very quickly. Cherry Bomb, again, it's a young lady inside a containment suit who's a sidekick to Human Bomb. John Henry Iron carries the hammer. Ladybug, sidekick to Red Beast, she can shrink. Betsy Ross and Molly Pitcher. Molly's got a pitcher that you pour out and it creates weapons. Betsy does something.
She's got a spool of thread from the original Flag. And it gives her like limited, like, you know, speed, strength, endurance, general, you know, prowess powers.
Okay. All right. Then Quiz Kid, sidekick to Mr. Terrific, super smart. And then Salem the Witch Girl, sidekick to Dr. Fate, who also has like a bad luck curse around her. Yeah. So of these, any favorites, any that you think we'll see more of as a team of Young Justice Society forms?
Yeah, I really had a I had a fondness for all of them. The mini gives each of them, you know, a really nice moment, some more than others. In general, before I zero in on a couple of them, I also just really like that Johns took this time to make the characters more diverse. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have like Cherry Bomb is African-American, John Henry is African-American, Ladybug is South American, you know, Quiz Kid is Indian. Like you get, it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know, we get why in the 40s, maybe that wasn't happening, but let's inject some, you know, everybody, you know, they're more representative heroes. So I was like, oh, that's really cool.
That's a great observation. Yes. Thank
you. Yeah, I liked that a lot. I was really glad that Johns did that. So I would say if I'm going to pick two, I really liked Quiz Kid. Mm-hmm. I liked I love the corniness of Mr. Terrific. I love the corniness of Fair Play, you know, and like the brazenness of wearing that and you know, I liked him being sort of the brains of the outfit, and so I'm interested to see where he goes. And then Salem the Witch Girl was so cool. Like, you know, clearly there's a Clary and the Witch Boy connection. You know, she's green. She's got a curse because she was taken out of the town, the village she was from. And basically anybody who leaves that village has a curse where anybody they love or keep close to them will meet a terrible end. And then in the JSA series that's going on right now, there's a hint that she's a big villain, you know, mm-hmm. later down the line. So I always love that. I love the you know, I liked that in Young All-Stars where they had Huntress and then she became Tigress, you know, and married Sportsmaster. Like she was a hero at young, but then she was going to become a villain. So those were the two I liked the most. And I liked Salem the Witch Girl as a fun, new, potentially evil magic character, you know, because there's so many possibilities to match up against Dr. Fate and Clarion and Zatanna. And so those were my two. What about you?
I absolutely adored Salem the Witch Girl. I loved her attitude. I love the fact that she's got this broom that she flies around that's sentient, sort of like a Cosmo from Star Girl, so there's a little bit of connection there. I love the hint that she's got a darker path ahead of her. So I don't think she's actually going to turn evil. I think it's going to be a character that knows that her destiny suggests she's going to become evil, and so she's going to be railing against that. I mean, she's full of attitude. I mean, she's really unpleasant. Yeah. And I think she's okay with that, and I am too. And I think I would love to see that character continue to be hostile and aggressive and bossy, knowing, though, that there's a danger she's going to turn evil and struggle and fight against it and make sure she doesn't. So I like that idea. I think there's a lot of potential there. I definitely think we'll see a lot more of her. The other one, now I'm biased. I am a ridiculously massive fan of the Red Bee. So Ladybug is one of my favorites, and I think she would be the great sort of wallflower type character to be in there. So, but I think Cherry Bomb's the other big one. I think Cherry Bomb, she's got a lot of power. There's a lot of angst there because she's stuck in the suit and she, you know, it could be killing her. So I think there's a lot of built-in teenage angst, which goes hand-in-hand with comic books. So of all these new characters, I would think on the Young Justice Society, I think we would see the Boom, Cherry Bomb, Salem the Witch Girl, and then my pick would be Ladybug. Yours would be Quiz Kid. Both are equally good. I don't know that we're going to see Molly Pitcher or Betsy Ross or John Henry Jr. again, or at least as regulars. Let's put it that way. I don't know that we'll see them as regulars on the team.
Yeah, and Molly and Betsy were interesting because they felt like, you know, two characters out of a league of their own. Mm-hmm. You know, very like, I'm from New York City and I'm from New York City. And you know, real kind of, you know, we're best friends. And they were cute characters. But Molly Pitcher, I was like, wait, you're carrying a pitcher. Like, okay, cool. And it does what? And because at one point when they're about to storm the castle, she's pouring water out and it's turning into a sword. And she's giving these weapons to the boys. Like, she's like, anybody else need a weapon? And I'm like, wait, what? And so I went back and read her Who's Who entry. And it was like, Molly's pitcher can pour weapons out of it and occasionally cause a flash flood. And I was like, of course it can. Like, I guess in a way it's no more ridiculous than a green lamp that in a ring that gives you magic space powers.
That's fair.
But it was so, I was like, I want to see her again just to see a writer have to make this stupid pitcher power like cool and useful. So I do want to see them again. I hope I do, but I think you're right. I think definitely, you know, and I think I'm probably wrong about Quiz Kid. I think he's going to fade to the background because Ladybug is much more endearing and, you know, so, but yeah, but at the end of the day, really cool characters. Like, I want more of these characters. They're visually compelling. We get little, you know, interesting backgrounds backstories for them, in the, which is, again, why what is a relatively simple story is stretched out to six issues, because you do get these character beats, and I love that. So I do want more of these characters, and I would buy a Young Justice Society book in a minute.
Right. That's what I'm thinking is, I don't think we'll get one. It would be hard if it wasn't drawn by Todd Knock. I think that's fair to say. Like, he is such a key component of why this series sang to me, that if we could get Todd Knock to draw it, then I'd be there absolutely in a heartbeat. I mean, I would buy it regardless, but Todd Knock would be the heart and the glue that holds it together. I think that's pretty necessary. And I do love at the end of issue six, you know, Courtney's putting this team together, right? And she's reviewing photos. It's this one great panel, and it just looks like a panel. But if you know your stuff, it's like, oh, that is totally recreating the cover of All-Star Squadron number one, where they're picking characters with photos. That's just like the best.
It's a really nice touch.
Yeah. Now, I got a question. They said that Courtney's already on two teams and she's joining a third, which I thought was pretty funny. What are the two teams? The JSA and are they saying she's part of the Seven Soldiers now? Is that what they're saying? Or
yeah, I think that's the implication.
Okay. I just wasn't sure what they were getting at there.
And, you know, the Seven Soldiers are sort of the non-team. So, but yeah, it was funny because when they said three, it took me aback as well. I was like, wait, what? And I was like, was she part of Young Justice for a bit? And it, she did team up at times with Young Justice, but then I remembered, oh, no, Seven Soldiers. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Okay. All right. Well, then that sort of makes more sense. All right. Got it. Oh, you know what we should talk about real quick? We made predictions on the Spring Break special. We made predictions, and I'll just rattle through. I jotted them down as I re-listened to it. We thought that Todd Knock would be involved with whatever comes next. We were right about that. We thought they were setting, or at least maybe I did, I don't remember. We said they were setting up the next generation of Seven Soldiers, of Victory. I thought they were going to take these time-lost characters and they would be the new Seven Soldiers. So we were wrong there, but we were close. They were setting up a team.
Close.
Now, here's something that is, I'm pretty impressed that you and I were able to divine ourselves here with our own snow globe of destiny, was they show that one panel of Dan the Dynamite, Wing, and Secret, and they mention the name Judy Garrick. Just from that information alone, we brainstormed this idea of a time travel story full of teenagers that had been removed from continuity, all being brought back into continuity. So we nailed it from there, which is astonishing. Now, I went on to guess that we would see someone like out of continuity Dick Grayson or something like that from the 40s. But in general, though, we nailed it. So I'm pretty impressed with ourselves.
Yeah, we did a good job. We really did. We, you know, pretty smart. A useless ability to predict future comic books, but smart.
Right, exactly. I will say there's a long history. We had a role-playing game group that went for about 10 years doing DC Heroes role-playing game. It took place from the year 2001 to about 2011, me and this group of fans. And we would come up with an idea, and 6 months later, it would appear in a Geoff Johns comic. I mean, this happened over and over and over and over to the point where it's like, okay, clearly we're in tune with, you know, kind of Jay's fandoms, I guess, or one of the guys in our group was selling ideas. So it's possible that one guy listened to our episode and sold it to Jeff. I don't think that's what happened, but I'm just saying there's a history there. There is a pre-existing condition. So,
well, you know, at least he went back to the well. You know, he knew what he was doing. And look, of his current work, this is the best thing he's done, you know. And so, he was right to listen.
This was an absolute blast. So I just, yeah, we're going to wrap up here in a second. And I do want to say I thoroughly enjoyed this thing ridiculously. Like, it was such a roller coaster. It was so much fun. I literally could just sit here again and stare at the Todd Knock panels for hours and just find so many little things, so many little touches and joy and happiness. And I absolutely love this. And I totally think this is the kind of series I'm going to come back to, even though we nitpick certain things, because that's what you do on a podcast. I think I would come back to this over and over. What about you?
It's highly rereadable. I can't stress enough that if you analyze it, there are things here and there. But even in the analysis, even in our notes, I think I at one point I was putting like my complaints, and then I put a note that's like, but none of that matters because it's wonderful. Like, I don't even care because it's so much fun. And so yeah, it's absolutely great to read. Like we said, the art and coloring is beautiful, and it's something that, you know, continues the legacy of not only Courtney Whitmore. But I love when comic book writers not only put toys back in the toy box, but create new toys, you know, and move something forward and propel something forward. You know, Johns famously creates Courtney Whitmore after his sister, who died, I believe, in a plane crash, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that was really this tribute to his little sister. And, you know, she's gone on to become this amazing character who's had her own TV show. And so you kind of never know where these, you know, where newly created created characters are going to go, but I really love the impulse to create. I love that impulse to be like, hey, let's add to the tapestry, let's add to the legacy. And they did a great knock, and John's did a great job, because I do want to know where these characters go next. So yeah, absolutely worth reading, tons of fun, and pairs beautifully with the Spring Break special.
And it's all out on DC Universe Infinite if you want to read it there. It's also, I saw a solicitation that said they were combining the Spring Break special and this miniseries together on one trade. So yeah, I hope they throw those Who's Who pages in the back. I mean, that would make a perfect collection right there. So definitely worth picking up, folks. So with that, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick podcast promo break. And then when we come back, we're going to cover your feedback, folks, from you people at home. We're going to cover your feedback from the Stargirl Spring Break special.
A World on Fire,
an All-Star Squadron podcast.
Join your hosts, Billy D.
and Herman, as we take a deep dive into the seminal DC Comics series created by Roy Thomas and Rich Buckler.
We'll be covering the series issue by issue, spotlighting our favorite characters,
and talking about the historical tie-ins as well.
So join us every month in A World on Fire, an All-Star Squadron podcast.
The world's strongest hero.
The warrior from a hidden island.
The master of super speed.
The wielder of the weapon from beyond the stars.
The champion of the seven seas.
They are the only ones standing before a world beyond the brink of collapse. Their mission: abolish war and crime, eliminate poverty and hunger, clean the environment, cure disease, even stop death itself. They promise within a year to make the world a utopia, no matter how many lines they might need to cross.
The Squadron Supreme Cast, an exploration of Mark Gruenwald's epic 1985 Squadron Supreme miniseries. A look at the heroes, the villains, the fine lines separating them, and how this miniseries continues to play an influence in mainstream superhero comics.
All right, folks, we're back from break, and yes, we are going to cover your feedback from the Stargirl Spring Break special episode that we did 2 years ago. So you guys probably don't even remember writing this feedback. But the first piece of feedback I want to cover actually comes from Twitter. It was some guy named Todd Knock. I don't know. Have you heard of him before?
Well, I believe the comment was on X.
Oh, God, no. Not 2 years ago, it wasn't. So he was responding. He actually listened to our episode, which I was floored that Todd Knock took the time to listen to our episode. And he retweeted out and said, fun podcast discussing the Stargirl Spring Break special and theorizing what is to come. Thanks for the kind words. So I'm honored that he listened, and that he obviously knew where the story was going. So Some of the fact that some of our theories landed, probably resonated with him. So very cool. All right.
It's awesome. And it's always nice to get the chance to tell a creator you enjoy their work. So
I know. Totally. So the rest of the comments are going to come from our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com, and we're going to cover also some of the emails received. Now, bear in mind, we are only picking and choosing little bits and pieces to read of your feedback, because there's so much of it, we don't have time to read all of that. So we're just going to highlight a few key points from each person. So first up is Brento3000. He says, gotta let you guys know how much I loved this episode. Like you, I found the Stargirl Spring Break special book to be one of the best things published by DC in recent times. So much nostalgia, reverence, and advancement. An art smorgasbord and tease. is galore. That's a great way to put it. I love that, Brent.
Yeah, Art Smorgasbord is great. Up next, we heard from Paul Hicks from New Zealand. Paul said, Sean and Shag are some of my favorite people to listen to, and together are even better. Sean, watch the show. I'll drop my bass like Paul. And I did, Paul. I listened to you, and the show was delightful.
So Paul, actually, I got to meet him recently. I hung out with Paul. He does the Waiting for Doom podcast, DC OCD, and much more. And so from New Zealand. Interesting. All right. they were here from Chris Franklin from the Firewater Podcast Network. He does shows such as JLU Cast, House of Frankenstein, and so much more. So when you and I did that episode, we talked about that amazing Jerry Ordway drawing of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. They had this great car. And you and I, we were doing it off the cuff. We kept naming the wrong names for vehicles. We just couldn't come up with it. So Chris is helping us out here. He says, Stripesy's car was the Rocket Racer, the Star Rocket Racer. The Whiz Wagon was used by the Newsboy Legion. But the Forever People rode the Super Cycle. So there we go. Thank you so much, Chris. I guess we need to go back to shop class and learn more about our supercars. Then he goes on to say, the retcon of Green Arrow and Speedy is brilliant. And it makes me wonder, why didn't someone think of this back in 1986 or so? And getting a young Greg Saunders back in the present day, I am down for that too. And then he says, I can honestly say it's the most fun, I'm meaning the comic, he says, I can honestly say it's the most fun I've had with a mainline DC Universe comic in well over 10 years. Thank you all for spotlighting it, and I look forward to wherever this is going, and I hope it gets there soon. Well, unfortunately, Chris had to wait 2 years, but, you know, the Green Arrow Speedy retcon of having them back in the 40s, it does remind me a little bit of the Hawkman retcon, where they said that Carter Hall from JSA went on to be the same Carter Hall from the JLA, which was a kind of a clean retcon for the post-crisis era.
Yeah, and I agree with Chris that the Green Arrow retcon is brilliant. I don't think it worked in 1986 because that's kind of firmly in the, you know, Grell or Green Arrow era or like right before it. And I cannot imagine the Longbow Hunters Green Arrow in the 40s. They'd be like, Green Arrow, why are you shooting everybody in the eye? Why are you killing everybody? It just doesn't work. So up next, we had Symbol Pending from the Power Girl blog entitled Symbol Pending. And they said, I only really know Stargirl from the telly, and this comic version reads very much like Courtney and family on the show. I was looking up the new the Infinite Frontier issue as you were speaking about Alan Scott's coming out. And apparently he told, quote, some of the boys on the Society, quote. So I assume it's something that will be explored when the JSA series starts up. And we do actually, the reason I wanted to address this is we do actually see this in that new Golden Age one-shot where they flash back to Green Lantern, Alan Scott, and Dobie Dickles talking on the street, and he's talking about how he's nervous about joining this Justice Society, and he's nervous because of his secret that, you know, that he's a homosexual. And Dobie's like, well, if they're good people, they'll be like me, and they won't care. And so that's that, which makes me love Dobie Dickles all the more. And then, you know, the couple people he told, I think Jay Garrick is one, and I'd be curious to know who else, but I'm really looking forward to that story unfolding of Alan Scott living with a secret, because, you know, that so many men and women lived with at that time period, and it doesn't change his continuity at all. You know, he probably still, you know, has the children with Thorn and eventually ends up with Molly, but then comes to realize that, you know, his true nature. So that I'm excited for that storyline as well.
Based on your recommendation last time, I went and read those Infinite Frontier stories, and yeah, it was great. So I'm really excited to see where that pans out as well. Up next is Liz Ann Oswald. She's got her own YouTube channel. She says, so Ollie was both Green Arrows? Interesting. So wait, didn't that Green Arrow exist for years? So how was he both? Well, that's where Siskoid chimes in. Just like you said, the Green Arrow in the Mike Earl series is so old because of that reason. So that's a nice little patch retcon. And then Liz Ann goes on and says, seeing the Seven Soldiers again is cool. I tried reading the Zatanna comic from the Seven Soldiers, but didn't get the other issue, so I had no idea what was going on. And Martin Gray says, I bought all the Seven Soldiers issues, Lizanne, and I still have no idea what was going on. That would be Morrison at his best, I guess.
I love that Seven Soldiers. I love that those books and those minis, and they are bizarre, but they're fun bizarre. We have more from Martin Gray from Jolly Scotland and Too Dangerous for a Girl blog. Martin says, I feel a challenge has been silently announced. Find more modern comics Shag would enjoy. Well, I offer the recent Generation Shattered and Generation Forge Giants. Now, recent, put an asterisk next to that, by writers Dan Jurgens, Robert Venditti, and Andy Schmidt, and artists including Ivan Reis, Rags Morales, Colleen Doran, Kevin Nolan, and Brian Hitch. They have a, quote, from the pages of Dark Knight Death Metal, quote, slug on the cover, but really there's no link. It's a big, bonkers time travel story involving Booster Gold, Commandy, the Golden Age, Batman, and more fun folk. If you don't like it, Shag, I'll give you your money back. And, you know, the pound is up against the dollar, so that's really good. Did you read those books?
I did. I actually did, and I thought they were a lot of fun. I love a fun, crazy, bonkers time travel story where, again, you don't worry about the continuity too much. You just, it's like Avengers Forever is a great example of that where, well, actually that one did worry about time continuity. Never mind. That's probably a bad example, but I love a fun time travel adventure where they just go for it, you know, throw some characters together, their times are out of sync and you don't worry about why. And it's just fun. So that was great. Now, if it makes you feel any better, Martin, I have been reading, I'm behind right now, but I have been reading some more modern comics. I've been reading Tom Taylor Nightwing. I was reading the Flash before it just just changed over hands recently. I was reading all the Deceased zombie comics, which I did not want to. I didn't want to read those, but I heard good things about Tom Taylor, so I fell in love with those. So I have been finding some of my joy with more recent DC comics, which has been a long time, long time.
I have to give a very quick recommendation. If you're enjoying the current Nightwing run, which is Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo, they did a 10-issue Suicide Squad run, and it has Blue Beetle in it, and it is really worth reading.
It's on my to-do list. I actually have it, like, those little lists you can build in there. I've got a list of to read, so that's on there. So I definitely want to dive into it. Then we get here from Net Minister, who takes me to task, but I'm going to take him right back. He says, just a slight point of clarification for the podcast promo. Cyclone was not part of Earth 2 Justice Society, nor was Johnny Quick, although he did work alongside them. Well, Net Administrator, if you listen to the promo, it says celebrating some of their favorite comics and characters associated with the Golden Age of comics, Earth 2, the JSA, and beyond. So the key there is associated and beyond. So that tells you right there that it's anyone in that sort of realm. So we can touch on anybody's associated with the JSA in any way, shape, or form. If I want to cover the Black Condor ongoing series, because, you know, he was in the Freedom Fighters, and that's kind of in that sort of iffy sort of thing. Sure, why not? So that's the beauty of it.
I like that you engineered the feedback so that you could be petty.
yeah, that's absolutely correct. Thank you.
So up next, we have Steve Givens from It's a Givens blog. And Steve says, the Green Arrow speedy time travel bit is an elegant solution to the continuity hole left by erasing the Golden Age Green Arrow. And although I get what was said about the time travel prompting Speedy's drug issues, there's an implication in the Spring Break special that Speedy falls into drugs because of the confusion of coming back to his own time. I take it as a speculation from a character who really doesn't understand how addiction works. So that's great, actually. That's a really nice sort of no prizing where, because you and I, Shag, were not, we loved the Green Arrow Speedy retcon. We did not like the implication that that's what led to his drug abuse. It's just, I don't know, cheapens it in some way. And I really like that Steve explains it.
Yeah, he does. And you pointed out when we listened that that speculation was coming from Pat Dugan. So it's not like it was coming from Speedy or Green Arrow. It was someone completely outside of that realm making some speculation. And between what you said and Steve said, they're like, Pat was way off base. So there we go. Then we're from Chris Lister, who says, I'm pretty sure that Hippolyta's time travel exploits have been re-retconned to not have happened, because we made some references to Polly being with the JSA last episode. So Chris Lister pointed out that's been done away with. Martin Gray does confirm and says that Diana has now been around since the 40s. And so I guess she was part of the JSA, which that works for me. That's perfectly fine. I liked Polly being in there, but, you know, as long as there's a Wonder Woman in the JSA, that makes me happy in the 40s.
Yeah, me too. I had no idea that it was retconned to be Diana now, so I'll trust Martin. And Martin gives a couple recommendations, which I'll trust as well.
All right. Then Ward Hill Terry from the band Stop Calling Me Frank says, and I keep in mind, Ward Hill Terry is that angry old man yelling, get off my lawn. And I adore him for it. And he says, as much as a stickler as I am for old continuity, last I knew there was simply hadn't been a Green Arrow in the 1940s. This seems like a neat kind of solution. But how old is Ollie and Roy now? You know what? Don't tell me. I'll just enjoy it like an old Brave and the Bold cartoon. And there you go. That is exactly what I've been getting at, Ward Hill Terry. Perfect. You nailed it. Just have fun with it. You know, don't get too hung up on the whys and the hows and the con. Just say, okay, that works, and just have fun with it. So I'm glad, Ward Hill Terry, that you enjoyed it. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I always think of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 opening. You know, remind yourself it's just a show. I should really just relax.
So very good.
I channel that a lot. Up next, we had little Russell Burbage from the Legion of Super Bloggers and Friends of Justice blog. He says, can't wait to pick up the new Stargirl series and, of course, the new JSA series. I first picked up Stars and Stripes because of the Seven Soldiers crossover issues and then got the back issues. Courtney was a jerk at first, which we talked about a lot in that episode, but she's matured and come into her own. She's one of my favorite JSA characters now, although I will always prefer the name Star Spangled Kid to Stargirl. He later says, I saw Alan and Obsidian in the recent DC Pride special. Have to track down the other appearances that Sean was referencing. I love the idea that DC is going to show us what a closeted superhero had to endure during the 40s and 50s, but I'm not sure if I like that it was Alan. It sounds interesting, but I think I would have preferred it to have been someone like Mr. Terrific or Wildcat, but we'll see. So that's interesting. I've heard similar feedback from folks where they're like, you know, Alan's this well-established, you know, character. But the truth is that was a common experience for many folks to, you know, pretend to be heterosexual out of safety and, you know, not really having a achieved acceptance. And in my mind, Alan makes a sort of sense because his two children come from, honestly, a quick affair with a woman. And he was, you know, he didn't even know they were born. She kind of drugged him. And then he doesn't really have a female partner until he's elderly when he reconnects with Molly, the Harlequin. So I think it does slot nicely in for him, though I do understand if, you know, some people feel like another character might have been a better fit. What about you?
Yeah, I'm fine with it either way. One of the things I like about it, though, is it gives Alan the support system of having Obsidian, someone that has had to come out before. And so he's got a support structure that makes him feel. So I think there's a lot of storytelling opportunity there. So I like that, you know, it fits, whether it's him or another character, that's debatable, whatever, sure. But as far as future storytelling opportunities, I like the fact that he's got Obsidian there as a support structure. And so I like that. I think it works well.
Yeah, me too. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Then last one we heard from Doug Adamson, who commented much later after the episode had been released. And he says, so none of these loose ends have been picked up in the last 13 to 14 months, which considering Geoff Johns' time running the Stargirl TV show, one can understand, I guess. But I sure wish we would have picked them up ASAP, especially as it is crazy that Stargirl's on TV and there is no comic published at this point with her in it. And he says, I would love her Stargirl companion book while there's still a season 3 on TV. Yeah, and that's the heartbreak of this, is that this series didn't get out there while the show was on TV, because it probably would have got a little bit more of a boost, you know, with the TV profile. I mean, I don't always know that for sure, because I remember when I worked in a comic book store back in the 90s, we did find there was zero correlation between movies and TV shows bringing new readers into the store. It might affect the current buying patterns of already buying comic readers. Like, you know, when the Iron Man movie came out, I don't know that drove anyone to the comic store, but it might have got a lot of people that were buying Superman and Batman to pick up Iron Man at that point. So there's an artificial bump, but really all it's doing is shifting the deck chairs, you know, really on the Titanic kind of thing. So I don't know. But I don't know. I want Stargirl out there. I think she's a great character, and I hope Young Justice Society gives her a chance to be in the spotlight and have an ongoing series. I really, really hope that happens.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, and I do wonder if it doesn't impact like trade sales at bookstores or online sales, you know, where, you know, kids are much more likely to access things now. Like they've heard of Stargirl and they'll look it up online. And I just want to point out one other thing really quickly, because in his feedback, Doug mentions Eclipso. And, you know, when they go to Emiko and Stargirl go to rescue the kids, they go to the Devil's Triangle, basically. And it's three islands. It's Starfish Island, the Green Arrow Island. It's the Orphan Island with this miniseries. And then it's Diablo Island, which is where the Black Diamond was found by Bruce Gordon, who turned into Eclipso. So definitely, I think Eclipso is on the horizon for you know, the future of this book.
And that makes a lot of sense. Once you read the JSA book, you'll see there's some stuff about Eclipso being hinted at in there as well. So, all right, well, that's going to do it. Again, guys, pick up these books, read them on DC Infinite, buy the trade, whatever you want to do. It is super fun. I don't think we spoiled anything completely heartbreaking. I mean, we went on and on about the Big Bad, but it's not that important. So, really, this series is about the glorious art. It's about the friendships made along the way. It's about the new characters. It's the character moment. So I still think it's worth picking up.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is not a book you read for surprise or shock, or, you know, you avoid spoilers. This is a book you read because you love these characters, you love this universe. You know, if you're a JSA fan, an All-Star Squadron fan, you know, this is right up your alley.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for being my co-pilot again, coming back to talk about this. Why don't you tell the folks at home where they can find more of you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love that we bookended this. The spring break special was a ton of fun. I love when we get to talk. We've seen each other in person since we did the spring break special. I even saw your better half, Rob, in person and his lovely wife. And so, you know, I'm on X or Twitter, whatever. I'm on X. I love that I now have a video or a recording of me, in, you know, saying I'm on X.
Oh, my gosh.
So, Sean42AZ. I'm now on Blue Sky at Sean42AZ. I'm telling you, Shag, make the jump. My buddy Greg Arujo gave me the invite, and all of our friends are there, and it's not an ad every four tweets, and it's not robots and porn and horrible, you know, people. It's just all the goodness. It's like a clean playground.
Once an invite comes my way, I will be there in a heartbeat. So
well, I'm new to it, so as soon as I get my invite, you'll be my first outreach. So so you can find me there at Sean42AZ. I am an occasional co-host on the World's on Fire All-Star Squadron podcast with Billy Delicious. Billy's wonderful. And Martin Gray as well, who's awesome. And Ross from the JSA blog and podcast. And then I'm still an occasional co-host on the Bat Pod with Bill Beer. And then eventually we'll resurrect some of my own podcasts. Never Ending Reading Pile. You can find Secret Wars and Beyond on the Pulp to Pixel podcast network. Took a hiatus from my own stuff for a little while, but I'm getting the itch again, and we'll be back soon.
There's nothing wrong with being a professional guest, you know. I mean, there's a lot to be said with just showing up, talking, and not having to do the editing.
I would say I'm Tim Pricing it, but Tim's a nicer guy than I am, so I can't really claim to be anything like him. But yeah, I kind of am Tim Pricing it.
Well, this has been such a blast, and I appreciate you coming. I am always looking for opportunities to podcast with you. I tease Sean off the air that a lot of times I'll go fishing. I'll throw an idea out on Twitter about an episode I want to talk about, and I'll wait to see who responds. And I'm waiting for Sean to respond every time. I'm like, come on, man. Come on. Come on, man. So, all right, folks. So you can leave your comments on this episode. I don't know when we'll get a chance to cover these comments again, but please, I want to hear your thoughts. We can interact there. It's over at firewaterpodcast.com/JSA presents. Leave your thoughts there and keep watching that feed, because again, very soon we're going to begin ramping up, and then a year from now we're going to be doing again month-to-month coverage of those awesome Mike Parabak JSA series, the mini series, mm-hmm. and more stuff from the 90s, and I'll have different co-hosts, and it'll be a lot of fun. You can also find us on Facebook as Fire and Water Podcast Network, and on Twitter, I'm still going to call it Twitter because I don't want to say I'm on X, as JSA Presents. You can find us there, or you can email us at justicesocietypresents@gmail.com. So folks, that is going to do it. Thank you again, and let us know what you thought of the comic. And again, thank you, Sean. And until next time, folks, join the fight
for justice.